I wanted to share with you some of Srila Prabhupada's pastimes when he came to Paris. As we grow older, then our memory begins to fade and we lose these priceless treasures of remembrances of our spiritual master and particular instructions that he may have given in a class or a particular darshan. When we were, after we had arrived in London and Prabhupada had given us that blessing by slapping us on the back and speaking those wonderful words to encourage us, then we were supposed to go to Paris the next day to begin our preaching there. But we wanted to be in Srila Prabhupada's association, but he'd heard that, and he called us to his room. Jai Pataka Swami Maharaj Ki. He called us to his room, and he encouraged us. He said, you must go now. You've come for this particular service, so you have to go. So myself and a devotee, we were lamenting. And I was hoping that Prabhupada would give some kind of personal instruction. I think every disciple, the general instructions are sufficient for going back home, back to Godhead, but everyone wants some special mercy from their spiritual master. So I was sitting there and I was hoping that Prabhupada would just say something that I could just hold on to, some instruction that I could think about, or he was remembering how he'd also received a personal instruction from his spiritual master on which he had based his entire life. At the very first meeting, our Srila Prabhupada and his spiritual master, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada said one time, even before he'd finished paying his obeisances to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was saying, you look like a nice educated young man, why don't you spread the message of Lord Chaitanya in the English-speaking language? Even before Prabhupada had got up from paying his obeisances to the sadhu, he'd already received this lifetime instruction, and Prabhupada said he was whole life thinking like that. He said, I couldn't execute that instruction immediately because I was in a householder ashram. I had to take care of my wife and my family, but in my heart I was always thinking of that day when I could actually implement that instruction. And gradually, when he left family life and began Back to Godhead magazine, it began in earnest. And history shows us how Prabhupada took that instruction to perfection and beyond. As we mentioned the other day, by his books are in practically all the languages of the world. So that one instruction he kept within his heart. So as we're sitting there in his darshan, I was just praying to Krishna, please, Prabhupada, could you give me some instruction that I could always remember and try to serve. So Prabhupada was speaking, so you go to Paris and you have my books translated into the French language and you start the Sankirtan. Of course, there were some devotees who were already preaching there. And then Prabhupada said, to encourage us, he reached over into his drawer, he opened his drawer, and he took out one kirta and one dhoti. And he gave the kirta to the devotee I was with, and he gave me his dhoti. And as he gave the dhoti, he said, a gift from a Vaishnava is a very special thing. So although I was a householder at that time, I remember that I would always wear that saffron dhoti like a chadar. And sometimes the sannyasis, our original ISKCON sannyasis, particularly Guru Kripa Prabhu, he would come through, and he was quite tough sannyasi at that time. He would come, and he'd come to Paris, and he'd see me in that saffron dhoti. I wore it till it practically wore out. I wore it like a chadar, shrouded in Prabhupada's mercy. He came up to me one time, he said, you're a householder. Why are you wearing saffron? I didn't flinch. I said, I'm wearing this saffron because it was given to me by our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. He backed off. So at that darshan, Prabhupada was encouraging us. And at one point he just stopped And he leaned over and he very close to me and he said, "Preach boldly and always have faith in the holy names." Tipped me like that. But I was so nervous, again, at that time, I could hardly remember. So I got out and I asked my godmother, "What did Prabhupada say?" He said, "Preach boldly." I was writing it down. "Preach boldly and have faith." You know. So we went on to Paris and we preached. And, of course, I mentioned how Prabhupada came. Whenever Prabhupada came to Paris, he always wanted to have engagements because Paris is renowned for its thinkers and, well, so-called thinkers and philosophers and writers and poets. So one of my godbrothers, Yogeshwar Prabhu, was always in charge of going out and, you know, meeting politicians and writers and philosophers and so forth and so on to come and meet with Srila Prabhupada. So I remember one darshan, there was a very distinguished gentleman there, but there were many other guests who had come into Prabhupada's room. And at the end of the darshan, Prabhupada asked for questions. And I was sitting next to this woman. And she said, "Swamiji, can you tell me what I was in my last life?" And Prabhupada just kind of looked at her in amaze, and he ignored her. And he went on, "Any other questions?" So he took another. Then the lady, she raised her hand again. She said, "Swamiji, can you tell me what I was in my last life?" And Prabhupada said, "That is not a very important question." And he took another question. The third time she raised her hand, "Swamiji, do you know who I was in my last life?" He looked at her, he said, "Yes, I do, but that is not a very important question. You should ask what you're going to be in your next life." I remember one particularly embarrassing incident. Prabhupada, Yogeshwar Prabhu arranged a program for Prabhupada at a prestigious Buddhist institution. And a lot of Parisians, you know, some Parisians identified themselves as, you know, Buddhists and, you know, practiced some pseudo form of Buddhism, whatever it may be. And they had invited their intellectual friends. And it was quite a prestigious crowd that was there. People were dressed up very nicely. It was in a very nice room. There was about 60 or 70 guests. And Prabhupada gave a 20-minute talk, and it was well-received. And then Prabhupada's servant, I believe it was Shrutakirti, he brought a big plate of fruit and sweets in, very nicely arranged, and put it in front of Srila Prabhupada. And like Prabhupada often did, I was imagining he wasn't that hungry, but to respect the prasad, he took a piece of fruit and he just flung it in his mouth. Then he took a sweet ball like that. And the idea was that everything was prasad and it was meant to be distributed to the guests. So after doing that, Prabhupada excused him. Everything was very formal and very high class and, you know, very nice people, and Prabhupada just enchanted them with his intelligent lecture. Everything was very pukka. And Prabhupada just excused himself. He was going to the washroom. So with Shrutakirti, he walked out. And as soon as the door closed, you know, there was Brahmananda Prabhu. I think Satsvarup was there. I think Guru Kripa was there. There were some other devotees from America. As soon as Prabhupada, they dove on that plate because they saw it as Mahaprasadam. And somehow the Brahmananda had hit it with his danda. And literally the prasadam just went up in the air. And then it was on the ground. And these devotees, all the devotees actually, because as soon as whatever a great man does, the common man will follow in his way. All the devotees dove and they were taking this prasadam and eating it. It's Prabhupada's maha. And I was supposed to be guarding the door so I couldn't go down, but I was looking at the guests and they were like, you know, what are they doing? You know. And they managed to finish it off just spotlessly, and then somebody quickly put the plate, and then Prabhupada walked and the devotees sat like this, like nothing had happened. We weren't really up to the grade which Prabhupada had expected us to be. One time we were doing Harinam when Srila Prabhupada was in Paris, and again it was another one of those difficult days. The Parisians were sometimes difficult and accepting Krishna consciousness. But we had a very nice Harinam party down in front of a store called Galerie Lafayette. Went on for many hours, and I remember that one lady was walking by, and the kirtan was just roaring, and just beautiful kirtan. Devotees were singing and dancing. It was about 40 of us twirling, and the lady came right in front of the kirtan party. She stopped, and she stuck her tongue out at us, and she put her fingers in her ears and closed her eyes. And she must have stood like that for 2 or 3 minutes. Very offensive attitude. She closed her eyes, stuck her tongue out, and put her fingers in her ears. So we just ignored her. And that evening when we got back from Harinam, Prabhupada called some of us in, and he asked me, as the Sankirtan leader, he said, "So how was the Harinam?" I said, "It was wonderful, Prabhupada." He said, "But there was this something very unusual happened. One woman came in front of the kirtan party and she stuck her tongue out." And Prabhupada said, "No." I said, "Yes." "And she closed her eyes." "No." "And Prabhupada, she put her fingers in her ears." "No." "What did you do?" he said. So I said, I was kind of taken aback, but what did we do? "We didn't do anything." Prabhupada said, "No, you should have gone up to her and pulled her fingers out of her ears and chanted in her ear, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama." One time we organized a program for Prabhupada. I can't remember the name of the hall. We had several big engagements with Prabhupada over the years in Paris. In one hall, I remember, it was during the student unrest in those days. There were, you know, the youth was in a rebellious spirit. It had been carrying on for a decade or so. And the Quartier Latin, they were in a revolutionary spirit. Ni maître ni dieu. No master, no God. Anarchy. This was there. And we did a big program, and about, there was maybe 2,000 people in the audience. And about 50 or 60 of these youth, they were college students, just far left and revolution and bring down authority and everything. They came in, and at first it didn't look like there would be any problem, but they sat right in the middle of the whole entire audience in a group. And Prabhupada he chanted the Jai Radha Madhava prayer, and then he was about 2 or 3 minutes into his lecture. And all of a sudden they all stood up at once and started shouting insults. "Anarchy, down with authority, this and that, there is no God," and all kinds of, and all of a sudden, at one point, they all began chanting, "Partir, partir, partir," means sit on the floor, because Prabhupada was on a big Vyasasan. "Partir, partir, partir, partir." Sit on the floor, because they didn't like Prabhupada was on such a prestigious seat. "Partir." So, you know, some of us stood up, you know, 10 or 15, to go and confront them, because it looked like it was going to turn into a pandemonium, a danger. People had started to actually leave. And Prabhupada just went like this. And they all became quiet, at least for the moment. And through the translator, Prabhupada said, "I'm prepared to sit on the ground. That is not a problem. But can any of you come up here and sit on the seat and speak the absolute truth to this audience? If not, be quiet." Now, I'd had a lot of experience with these youth, because when we were doing Harinam, sometimes they'd come and they'd throw things at us. Sometimes there'd be fist fights. They'd come and they'd spit in our face. They were just, it was impossible to deal with them. But when Prabhupada said that, they all sat down like little puppy dogs. You didn't hear a word the rest of the night. So I was thinking, how powerful is my spiritual master that he can confront such a rebellious audience and somehow make them act like gentlemen, at least for the rest of the lecture, an hour and a half. Sometime after the temple had, it for Rula Sur. It was very successful over the years. And Prabhupada came and he saw how the temple room was just full of devotees. I mean, they were literally devotees out in the street looking in the windows as Prabhupada would lecture on some of his visits. So one time, Prabhupada gave the suggestion. He said, we should get a farm community somewhere outside of Paris where, you know, these devotees, and particularly the grihasthas, they can go and they can live in the natural life of the city. We can have gurukul, we can have cow protection. In those days, so many communities were developing because of that same situation. And he said, if we had five such places in Europe, he said, we could take over the entire continent. So he was very eager for such a community. So he himself, actually, we took Prabhupada in a car and we traveled maybe 200 or 300 kilometers south of Paris. And devotees had investigated there were a few opportunities for communities. You know, he actually wanted a castle. He wanted a chateau. He said, I think we should get a French chateau. So which for us was like way beyond our means, our wildest dreams, but Prabhupada always thought big. So we looked in the newspaper and there were chateaus and castles available for several million dollars. And the temple president said, but Prabhupada, no, he said, let us go and see. So I remember for a day or two we drove and we'd visit these big properties and, you know, there were different options. Eventually we did get one of those properties in Lucy-le-Male, near Valençay, under Loire, beautiful castle which Prabhupada named New Mayapur. And it's still going on very nicely today. But I remember when we were looking, we're getting tired, so we took lunch in a little field, beautiful little field, and Prabhupada was sitting there. And then Yogeshwar said, Prabhupada, can I take a photo of you? And Prabhupada said, you're always taking so many photos. Wherever I am, you're always in front taking photos. But Yogeshwar said, I want a special photo. So Prabhupada said, oh, you'd like me to pose? He said, just like you're Napoleon, I shall pose like you're Napoleon. So Prabhupada stood up and he had his cane. And he was right there in the field. And he had his hat. And you can see even today, it's a famous picture. There's two or three of them. Prabhupada in a wheat field in the middle of France. And he's there with his cane by himself. And he has that kind of Prabhupada hat on. He's standing there. One photo is with eyes closed. But there's a very famous one on the cover of the English edition of The Science of Self-Realization, the pocketbook one. You see Prabhupada looking up. You know that photo? Science. Prabhupada says, shall I pose like Napoleon? Took a few photos. Prabhupada said, was that nice? Famous photo. So, when Prabhupada was at New Mayapur, of course, he visited, I think, there twice, installed Krishna Balaram. And one time he gave a darshan outside, and 100, 150 of us were sitting there. Prabhupada was speaking. So the Indi asked for questions. So I thought, if I ask a question, my spiritual master will see me. He'll recognize me. He wanted to be noticed. So Prabhupada had been speaking about how the pure devotee of the Lord, he sees Krishna everywhere. Even within this inferior creation, he gave the example. He said, just like a mother may see her little daughter's shoes, and although the shoes are something separate from the baby, because she relates them to the baby, she immediately remembers her child. So Prabhupada said, in the same way, although this material energy is distant from the Lord, it's this inferior energy, because it's Krishna's energy, whatever a pure devotee sees in this world, he remembers Krishna. So he sees Krishna everywhere. And he finished his lecture like that. So he said, are there any questions? I immediately raised my hand. He said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. You said that the pure devotee of the Lord sees Krishna everywhere. But the other day in Bhagavatam class, you were quoting Shikshasakam prayers, where Lord Chaitanya says, O Govinda, feeling your separation, I'm considering a moment to be like 12 years or more, and tears are flowing from my eyes like torrents of rain. So there it appears that the devotee is feeling so much separation. Krishna is very far away. I said, I don't understand. It appears to be contradictory. In one sense, the devotee sees Krishna everywhere, and in another sense, he's feeling intense separation from Krishna. Can you explain this to me? So Prabhupada paused and he closed his eyes and he was considering what to say. He looked at me, he opened his eyes, he looked at me, he said, "You will understand the answer to this question only when you are a very advanced devotee." That's all he said. So the idea being that concept of Vipralamba Bhava, this is a subject matter that we begin to understand as we become more purified in devotional service, we go deeper into the philosophy. At that time, Prabhupada felt he wasn't going to explain everything to a young devotee. And then we took prasadam, and there's devotees visiting from all over the place, many, many devotees. So their prasad was spread out here, there, and everywhere. So Prabhupada said he would go upstairs and he would go into his room, which was just overlooking the field where we were taking prasadam. So he came in, went upstairs, but he'd left his charter. So I said to Prabhupada's servant, who was just walking, I said, "Can I take this charter to Srila Prabhupada?" He said, "Yes, yes, you can go." So I thought, well, a special opportunity. I go into Prabhupada's room, off, give him back. Maybe he'll say a few words to me, whatever. So I the charter, and I went upstairs. I knocked on Prabhupada's. There's no answer. I knocked again, no answer. I just opened very quietly. I was just going to place it on the table there. I walked in, and Prabhupada was looking out the window at, 350, 400 devotees taking prasadam. And because he wasn't moving, he was just staring. I couldn't see his face, just a little side of his face. He was staring out there. I didn't want to disturb him, so I didn't move. I just waited until he said I could be excused or whatever. After quite some time, 30 or 40 seconds, Prabhupada turned around and there were tears coming from his eyes. And he said, not directly to me, but he just said into the air, he said, "Let them take Bhagavat Prasad." So then I quietly paid my obeisances and went out, and I immediately remembered the verse. The spiritual master is very pleased when he sees his disciple taking the four kinds of spiritual foodstuff, because that foodstuff is in and of itself a very direct form of mercy of Krishna that purifies the heart very quickly. Now, I was thinking on the stairs down, Prabhupada is actually personalizing that verse so much that he is actually pleased. I saw the tears coming from my eyes. Let them take Bhagavat Prasadam. So very often when I see my own disciples taking prasad, I try to remember that instance and how pleased Srila Prabhupada was, and we can take nice Bhagavat Prasadam. So I'll turn the microphone over to Maharaj at this point. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sisi Bhagavat Prasadam ki, Gaur Premanandi.